Okay, so as was mentioned in the introduction, I'm going to actually be presenting a study that was done by my colleague, Dr. Jared Parrish. So I apologize in advance if I can't answer questions, but I will definitely try. And also, if for anybody who was here yesterday, this is the same presentation that I gave yesterday at the MCH session, so hopefully that won't deter anyone from being here. So I'll be talking about Jared's study, Accounting for Coding Misspecification in Passive Birth Defects Surveillance. And here's a little agenda of what I'll be talking about, going through the Alaska Birth Defects Registry, which we call ABDR. It's a passive surveillance system. And then I'll be talking about the methods of this study that he did using the Bayes theorem to apply it to calculate informative prevalence estimates, and then give an example of microcephaly. The Alaska Birth Defects Registry has been operational since 1996, and it is in state statute. It's as a passive surveillance system, although we have done some medical records review for specific conditions that have come up over time. And we receive reports from multiple sources, so everything from hospitals to individual specialist providers. ABDR collects a wide range of defects. It collects all 43 of the nationally reportable conditions, and then over time we have added some additional state-defined conditions. That does have to be added into our state regulations. It includes the list of all of the conditions that can be collected by ABDR. For the first 10 years or so, from 1986 until 2005, cases were reportable by any physician who saw a child up to that child's first birthday, a child who had one of these conditions. And then in 2006, we expanded that to up to the child's sixth birthday. And part of that, or I guess the main reason for that, was to try to better capture children with FAS or FASD, because that's often not diagnosed until the child's much older or gets into school. Another big change that we did was including Medicaid data starting in 2007. So both of these, especially the expansion of the age range and the inclusion of Medicaid, really did have an effect on the number of reports that we were receiving. And over throughout this whole long time period, there was so much, we just had a lot of doubt about whether the reports that we were getting in were real reports and whether changes in the number of reports was really reflective of a change in the statewide prevalence or if it was just something to do with the reporting. So in 2016, we updated our data analytics, so that's what I'll be talking about. We went through a system evaluation following the CDC guidelines for evaluating surveillance systems, focusing on these six attributes, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with. And after we looked at each of these attributes, it was pretty clear that the ABDR system needed an overhaul. So as I mentioned, we receive reports from a whole range of reporters, and I think there were over 200 reporters, which for Alaska was a lot. I don't know how that compares to other states. And some were better than others at reporting regularly to the system. We were limited to only collecting information on conditions that were specifically listed in the statute, and while we could change that, it was a pretty difficult and complex process that could take a lot of time. So we didn't think it was very flexible. Some providers were reluctant to report. They would say, well, why do I have to, I'm reporting to the Health Information Exchange. Why can't you just pull the data from that? And that would kind of vary based on changes in the medical records staff at different places. We didn't have a good idea of the predictive value positive or the representativeness for many of the conditions that we were collecting. And then because we were collecting data up to age six for every child, we had this six-year time lag before we felt like we could really report the information. So we were kind of stuck on reporting data on births that had occurred 6 years prior, which really just wasn't what most people wanted to see. We decided to focus on these three key issues, looking at improving pieces of our data collection process, our internal data processing, and then also how we were putting out research and reports. Over this whole 20-year time period, we had just done very few reports. We really weren't using the data because we just had so many doubts about its validity and the data quality. So there were these multiple efforts that are now in process to improve our reliability and consistency. And in particular, we're looking at trying to better estimate the defect prevalence. And that's what this next slide. So all of our prior prevalence estimates were just based on reports. So if we received a report, that was counted as a condition, and then that's what we reported back to the national birth defects people at CDC. And for many defects, Alaska was reporting rates that were above the national estimate. These are some examples of specific birth defects listed here. So for some, we were way above, about two times or more higher for some defects, and then just a little bit higher than others. But again, we just didn't know if that really meant that Alaska had higher rates of these defects. And traditionally, for passive surveillance systems, you tend to see lower rates relative to active surveillance systems. So this is the systematic process that my colleague Jared went through last year that he decided to undertake for each of the conditions in our system. So starting with all of these unique reports by child and condition that we were receiving, he drew a sample, or he's going to be, he has done this for some, drawing a sample of up to 50 cases of a specific condition. And we limited it to 50 cases just due to our capacity, because the idea was we would send out our medical records abstractors to conduct medical records review following the NBDPN, the National Birth Defects Prevention Network guidelines, and then classify each condition as confirmed, rejected, or undetermined, and then calculated confirmation probabilities for that sample, which would inform the adjusted condition prevalences. One of the key decisions that was made early on was to focus these new prevalence estimates on the younger children, age 0 to 3, as opposed to all the way up to age 6. And this was to try to improve the timeliness of the system. We just felt like that additional 3 years was not really capturing too many more cases. So how was this done? He decided to apply Bayes' theorem to the problem. And this is a statistic that many of us, or a theory that many of us use, might use every day without even realizing it. It involves incorporating your prior knowledge from your previous experiences with new evidence from your senses to assign probabilities to everyday things. So an example that might be, if you've lost your keys and the previous time you lost it, your 2-year-old might have hidden them in their dollhouse. And if your two-year-old's in the room right now, that's your current experience, you might think, well, there's a good probability that my child took the keys again and put them in the dollhouse. So it's combining all this information from prior and current experience. So in this case with ABDR, we have all of this prior information from all the cases we've been collecting over time. So I'm not going to go over this slide in detail, but it's mainly to show how we rearranged the original formula for Bayes so that we could take observed information from the reports that ABDR was receiving and information about true and not true cases derived from our sample that we went out and did the medical records review to try to solve for what we wanted to know, which was PD, the probability of disease in the overall population. So the bottom here shows how the original Bayes formula was rearranged to incorporate this observed and information from our sample. Some important assumptions that we had to apply were, one was that we have the universe of all cases of a given defect in Alaska and that the reporting completeness is constant. So we wanted to, we had to assume that every case of each specific condition was eventually reported to ABDR by age 6. And part of our previous quality assurance efforts had indicated that we were getting about 95% of all conditions, of all major congenital anomalies. And then we also had to assume that the case confirmation probabilities were constant across age strata. So if a 1-year-old was reported to ABDR with a specific condition, the probability that that was a true condition would be the same if it was a 5-year-old. So that was another assumption. And then the probability of disease among kids who were not reported was something that was unknown to us because we didn't have their information. So that this is where we applied the information from the older kids that we weren't going to be focusing on, so the children ages 3 to 6, we were going to use as a proxy. So we have information, because we had been collecting all of that information on the older kids, we were able to use information on the probability that they were true cases to apply that and say, well, if every kid is eventually reported to us by age 6, if they hadn't been reported to us by age 3, those are the kids who are in that not reported group. So going through an example with microcephaly, we sampled from reports using the ICD-9 code 742.1 that occurred among births during 2007 through 2014, and used the NBDPN guidelines to classify them based on severity. During this time period, there were 174 unique children reported to ABDR. We pulled a sample of 62 of those, and then you can see that most of these, 44, were excluded. They were not determined after medical record review to be microcephaly. And then 13 were severe, 3 were less severe, and 2 were possible. So that's a total of 18, which will come up on this next slide. So then during that time period, there were 90,481 births in Alaska, and 172 were reported to us. 151 were in that age less than 3, and then 21 were in age 3 through 6. Out of our sample, there were then 18 of 62, there were then 18 confirmed cases. So to calculate the probability of being reported, it was the 151, again, that's the children less than age 3 over all of the births. And then for the probability of not being reported, it was that all of the births minus those who were reported over all births. And then the probability of disease among those reported was the 18 over all the sample of 62, so a 29% probability of disease among those reported. That probability of 29% was then applied to the 21 cases that were older than age 3, the 3 through 6, to get a probability of disease among the not reported population. And then all of those pieces were pulled together into the final formula to find the probability of disease in the population. And it came out to be 5.5 per 10,000 live births versus our original reported prevalence of 19 per 10,000 live births. So it really reduced the estimated prevalence. This table shows some of the adjusted estimates after going through that process for several other conditions. And again, you can see that it really did reduce it. By some conditions, it reduced it by quite a bit more than others. So as many of you know, ICD codes tend to have a lot of miscoding, but it does seem to be differential by condition. So again, ICD reports alone have suspect specificity when you're using that just to identify certain conditions, but case confirmation can help and allows for better comparison. Our rates seem to be much closer to the national rates once we had gone through this adjustment. So we felt like that was probably a more accurate representation of what was going on in Alaska. The process could be refined for specific populations. So if you were interested in looking only at a certain race or a certain maternal education level or something, you could go through this for those smaller populations. And for some conditions, this was vitally important. This graph is a few other potential applications we've thought of specifically for other conditions where you might be using ICD codes for surveillance, but you don't know the true disease prevalence and you don't have the capacity to follow up on every single case. Going through this process of drawing a sample and calculating probabilities could be helpful. And it also, or if timeliness is important, again, one of the difficult things is having some informative information or the possibility of obtaining it. And here's Jared's contact information if you have any questions. But I don't know if I have a little bit of time, 2 minutes, if anyone has questions.
a drop in the numbers that were not confirmed with the disease? Were you looking at like rule out conditions, like physician diagnosis, rule out microcephaly, or do you have any idea on what fell out?
Let me see what I think I had a little bit for specifically for microcephaly. Well, I guess going back to this slide, it was, does that, the normocephalic and then the macrocephaly with the larger head, so is that, does that answer your question?
No, I can talk to Jared more. I was thinking more like actually about the medical records and seeing did the physician rule out.
I mean, I think that was, I know maybe not specifically for microcephaly. I know we do see that for other conditions. Yeah.
So yesterday we were talking about how FASD is such a slippery diagnosis that occurs so late sometimes in a child's age range.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you could use what you know about mothers' drinking patterns, the intensity of drinking, as part of the prior experience to help with that diagnosis. And if that's something you could factor in, at least into some of the
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's an interesting thought. I don't know. I'd have to. I could mention that. Yeah.
Thinking it's like, well, that would be, you know, like part of the pattern that you might see.
Mm-hmm.
And if you knew about mother's drinking habits, that could be your prior information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if we linked something like linked prams to our birth defects registry, like that other presentation yesterday, and looking at FAS, yeah, I could see some possibilities there.
Was there? Please tell Jared how novel and it's so simple and elegant.
Yeah,
it was a really nice presentation and approach.
Thanks. I'll let him know. Was there one more question, maybe? Yeah.
When you collect up to age 7, mm-hmm. prior to age 7. Have you looked at whether the conditions are different that you collect after age 2 or 3, or if they're just slow coming in? And, you know,
like the severity might be less or something. I don't know if they've looked at that. Abby, do you know, she's also from Alaska? Yeah, I'm not sure. That's a good question. If there's a reason why they're not reported to us until later, and I don't know.
And do you have a list of what you actually collect for conditions, or do you collect everything?
Well, we collect the 43 nationally reportable, and yeah, we do have then a list for Alaska of what other ICD codes we collect. Mm-hmm. Up until now, we've been reporting the reported estimate just assuming that all reports are true cases. But we're starting to create new reports using RPUBs, which is something Jared has played a lot around with, and we are going to be giving both the report prevalence and the adjusted prevalence.
So you need to spend prevalence in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. We'll make sure to keep that in mind. It is, yeah, I think that's, yeah. Thank you.